This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lee Chui Lin. For some of us, the title Downtown is that song, a song that conjures up images of a blonde English lady singer in bell bottoms that shimmer in the light. But when this song, sung by Petula Clark, came out in 1964, my guest Ashton Moore wasn't even born. Ashton, however, doesn't have an album titled Downtown, and he's in KL to perform at No Black Tie. Just to kind of do a palate cleanse, this is what we're actually talking about today. Ashton, welcome to the show.
Hello, Lynn. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastically well. Thank you very much for having me today.
Let's start with this. When did you first start getting into jazz?
Honestly speaking, I started getting into jazz around the first year of my university studies because a man named Rodney Whitaker, who's a famous bass player, who's also from Detroit, he came to my high school, Lewis Cass Technical High School, and I auditioned for him as a classical singer, and I sang a song called Witness, and he said, oh, okay, I'm going to turn you into a jazz singer. And I said, man, whatever, okay. And then I walked away because I had no intention on going to school in Michigan. I thought I would go to a historically black college or university in the South, which is what all the, you know, all the people were doing. I was a marching band head. I was a percussionist. And I sang for them because I sang classically around town because my father is also a classical singer. So I sang for him this classic, this Negro spiritual. And he said, sound good, man. I'm going to turn you into a jazz singer. I said, okay. And then he calls my mother and says, well, you know, I have some money for your son if he wants to come study at Michigan State University. And my mom said, hey, this guy that you met the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, the Rodney guy. And she said, well, he's got a scholarship for you if you want to go study jazz. And I said, but I don't know anything about jazz. He said, that's where you're going to study. And I said, thanks, Mom. And it came down to where I wanted so badly to go down south, to be in the marching band, to just take on that culture. And she said, you know, you have 3 days before they take this deal off of the table. And I took it to the last day in hopes that some miraculous thing would send me down south, but it just wasn't in the cards for me. And that was just the start of me beginning to learn jazz. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know Miles Davis. I didn't know anything about anybody. I even forgot Rodney's face. He apparently like lost 50 pounds and he said, hey, man, how you doing? Thanks for coming to Michigan State University. And I said, hey.
Hello, stranger.
He said, man, you don't remember me? I gave you a scholarship. You don't remember who I am? I said, I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm you know. Oh, so that's Rodney. What did he play? You know, and then I tell him that all the time. And he kind of laughs about it. Like, but he was a very large influence as in my beginning stages of singing jazz music.
What is the difference between being a classical singer and a jazz singer?
Oh, they're worlds apart. Honestly speaking, I believe classical music to be a European art form and jazz to be America's classical music. Born out of, you know, New Orleans, a lot of, you know, the immigrants, when they came into the port, they all had to play from this red book. And everybody played these same melodies out of this red book, their style. And then over time, we started calling it jazz and then into jazz. And basically, as far as singing is concerned, I'm a vocal instructor, so I'm about to get a little nerdy really quickly. When you sing classically, you abduct your voice like this. You sing with a more open tone. But when you sing jazz, you can sing more like in your spoken voice. You know, every valley, and then there's a lot more room for freedom. I'll say, like, I believe that when you sing a classical piece, there are 12 ways to sing it, not 13. But when you sing a jazz piece, there are infinite ways to sing it. The way you want to sing it, the way I want to sing it, I could take some of the way that you sing it, putting it into my singing, and we can do it vice versa. which means that everybody in this office here, we will all have a different interpretation, and neither one of us are wrong, unless we're singing flat. Now, that's with every song and every style of music, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm entitled to that. But as far as singing is concerned with classical has more of a strict roadmap how to do it. Even though it will sound different from singer to singer, that roadmap still needs to be followed. Where, as you'll hear at No Black Tie this weekend, I take some songs and, like, you're like, what song is that? But then the melody comes and you're like, oh, it's that song. But that's the freedom of jazz and jazz singing especially.
How long did it take you to love jazz? You know, going from having that roadmap to, you know, well, it's a free-for-all now. Go forth.
It took a while because all through the first year, people said, oh, man, you sound so classical. But, you know, your voice sounds all right. You know, it's not bad, but it's just kind of funny because I hear you trying. But I would have to say to love jazz, it took, I mean, a good 3 to 4 years because I couldn't scat at first. And I asked one of my professors, I said, so how long is it going to take me to be good at scatting? And he said, okay, I'm going to be real with you, Ashton. Check me out. You're going to suck for 7 years. And I'm like, what? I only have 4 before I graduate. He said, that's right. But that's the thing about being a musician. This is not a 4-year life. You're going to be a musician for the rest of your life. Or perhaps you should change your major. And I said, okay. And honestly speaking, he was absolutely 100% correct. After that 7th year, I could feel the language. It was pretty much like learning a language. Like a baby, they think, you know, they coo, and then they start putting words together. And then by the time they're 7, they're in school and they're talking too much. You know, but that's how long it took me, a good 4 to 7 years, because I had to learn how to make melodies. I had to learn how to interpret lyrics, had to learn how to sing the lyrics. I had to study countless musicians because I was starting late. You know, all my friends were like, oh, do you know who Johnny Hartman is? Oh, do you know who Eddie Jefferson is? Do you know who Billy Eckstein is? And I'm like, no. So everybody was just being very open to me at Michigan State, making me CDs and just turning me on to all this music. And actually, the one CD that made me fall in love with jazz my first year was The Jazz Singer by Eddie Jefferson. So a lot of what I do in my show from then and now has a lot to do with Eddie Jefferson. You know, he created a style of singing called vocalese, where you would take a horn player solo and write lyrics to them. And so, for example, Billy's bounce is, and Eddie said, I've overlooked so many things through the years, through my tears, through my years, then I went and opened my eyes. So it's kind of like that. And I said, oh, that's difficult. I want to do that one, you know, because, you know, I just wanted to do the things that no one else was doing. And I just wanted to stand out a bit. And that's one thing that no one else did around me. And I still don't hear that many male vocalists do.
How does having a formal education shape how you see jazz and how you see what you do?
Having a formal education kind of, I don't want to get too dark, but having a formal education lets me know that the world is not like that. It is, you know, like being in school is a protective blanket, and I think every student should realize that. When you're in school, you're in a safe haven that you must take advantage of, because it will never be like that in the real world. If you go to any city, like I live in Tokyo, any city in the world, it's not that safe. Nobody cares until you, like, it's a show me kind of thing. But at school, it's like, oh, that was nice. And then they pat you on the back. One time I did a performance at school and I sang the entire song not in a key. If you can imagine, okay, let's just say that the bass player comes in and he doesn't really hit the B flat. He goes to like B flat, B double flat, and plays everything like that because he's playing on a bass that he's never played on before. And you're a singer trying to hear the key center, but there is no key center. And everybody said, oh, good job, good job. That will never happen in real life. So having a formal education, it's allowed me to see other things. To be a working musician that can pay your bills, you have to educate people. You have to share your talents through things other than performing. Performing has to be your profession, but the peripheral things about the music have to be your passion in order to make a living.
You're also a multi-instrumentalist, and I was wondering whether that affects how you kind of sit within the conventions of jazz, because, you know, there are different modes to different instruments, to your, you know, to different weapons of choice.
I choose to only play the piano nowadays. Like, I used to play the timpani and the marimba. I was a percussionist when I was in high school, but with that formal education thing, I couldn't practice any of those instruments because I was not a percussion major. So there were like these beautiful marimba, these beautiful timpanis, and all this music I had in my bag. But they said, I'm sorry, you can't have that, because if a percussion major wants to practice that, you can't. We have to reserve that for them. So I just slowly picked up the piano, or jazz piano, more and more through the help of Rick Rowe, you know, out in Michigan as well. He showed me these voicings that just works all over the place. So every time I introduce myself, I say, ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to play for you, yada, yada, this and that song. And I would like to remind you that I am a singer who can play the piano, not a piano player who can sing. So I kind of lower their expectations a little bit, so that no matter where I put them, you know, when I start singing, they're like, oh, man, it's not so bad. And I'm like, yeah, I told you that, right? You know, I'm not that bad. You know, because I just try to, you don't need much. A lot of my piano friends tell me, you don't need that much, Ashton. You just need to lay down the basic groove as long as it feels good. You know, let your voice carry it, because you're a singer. You know, like, you don't have to worry about all these instruments. Just perform. As long as you got the basic framework down, you know, just do your thing.
And I understand that you won a contest or a competition.
I won a competition.
A voice competition.
I was a semifinalist in the Monk competition in 2010, yes. There were 236 applicants, in which they told me less than 10% of them were male. So that's about, what, 20 people? 20 guys, and of that they chose three. I was a semifinalist, but a friend of mine, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, was actually the champion of that. But that was a very interesting experience also. When I heard her voice for the first time, I said, oh my God. Everybody who I let hear her voice, they were like, whoa. You know, and actually she just recently won a Grammy, and my friend, a close friend of mine, is her drummer. And I'm just so happy for all of them. That was just an excellent experience for me to be flown into D.C. because that was my first time home after moving to Tokyo. And I just said, how am I going to get home? I can't afford to go home. And then I entered this contest and they brought me home. I got to perform for all these famous people. Just got to meet them. It was a flooring experience and I really enjoyed it.
You've mentioned Tokyo a couple of times now. Why are you based in Tokyo? What brought you there?
I'm based in Tokyo because, first, there was work there. I, as some of my friends would say, moved out of Michigan in the nick of time. I moved the week that President Obama became president-elect in November. That was the first week of November. Soon thereafter was the big housing crash of 2008, if you will. And everyone I called, they said, Ashton, oh my God, you could not have moved at a better time, because the weather was speaking to me. My pockets were shrinking. My gas tank was just surprisingly always on empty. And I said, well, you know, and with my wife, Ravon Moore, I said, you know, I would like to, you know, continue on, you know, as a couple. You know, she was like, well, I'm not coming to Japan as your girlfriend. And I said, okay, I got it. So, of course, I put a ring on it. And I said, okay, so here's my thing. Everyone's always, oh, when you're getting married? Oh, when you're having kids? Oh, when your kids having kids? Oh, you know, it's just all these unnecessary questions for a lack of conversation. So I said, before we have children, I want to show you the world. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's my intention. And now we've been to about, I've taken her, we've gone together to about 9 countries now. So it's actually really cool, because now she doesn't even really want to do what she did before. She was like, I wanted to be a teacher, but now that I've been all these places and I see that there's so many other things to do, I think there's something bigger and something better with teaching, again, with those peripheral things with the formal education that I can do to have a bigger impact on the world.
Coming back then, you know, from around the world to what you'll be doing at No Black Tie this weekend, what will you be singing?
I will be singing some of my originals from downtown. Please come and buy the album. It's a very beautiful album, inspired by the works of Berry Gordy. He was, of course, the founder of Motown, but not many people know that he wanted to sell jazz records first. And he failed at that. He and a partner of his, they failed at selling jazz records because everyone came in and they wanted to hear the pop tunes. So what Berry did was he went and got jazz musicians that we now call the Funk Brothers. And the Funk Brothers have more number one hits than any band or any group in the world, you know, because they played on everything. So I kind of paid homage to that, to jazz musicians who just want to make a living. When people hear me sing, they say, oh, you're not a jazz singer. Oh, you're kind of an R&B singer. Oh, you're not an R&B singer. You're kind of a jazz singer. But my music is fun. Bottom line, it's fun. It makes you want to dance. If we have a song in Detroit, it goes like this. If this don't make your booty must be dead. And it just repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, you know. And that's kind of what my intention of my music will be. So back to what I'll be doing. I'll be doing a lot of Eddie Jefferson. I'll be doing a lot of my own original, like Downtown. I have a song called Cognac Weather. It's kind of like an interlude. Just a lot of things, a lot of mood music, but a lot of energy behind it as well. A lot of arrangements of famous songs like On a Clear Day. And you won't know it's On a Clear Day until I start with the melody, as I stated before, because that's just the fun in music. It's, there's no roadmap. It's what we want to do. And what I want you to do is come and have a good time. I don't want you to sit there and concentrate and think about, oh, I love how he did that in flair. It doesn't matter. Did it feel good? Then my job was done. I was successful.
Ashton Moore featuring the Patrick Toebrek Sextet will be at No Black Tie off Jalan Nagasari in the Bukit Bintang area this Friday and Saturday at 10 p.m. with a cover charge of 40 ringgit. Ashton, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Ashton Moore, who's going to be performing at No Black Tie, a jazz singer. You've been listening today to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You wander down the lane and far away, a song that would not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.